The Institute of Child Nutrition is proud to present iBites. Here you will learn about all aspects of child nutrition programs, from research to resources, from oral histories to best practices. Each iBites episode features a wealth of information to help promote the continuous improvement of child nutrition programs. I'm Dr. LaWanda Morse, the Associate Director of Grants at the Institute of Child Nutrition, and I will be your host. Well, hello, and welcome to another episode of iBites. My name is Dr. LaWanda Morse. I'm the Associate Director of Grants here at the Institute of Child Nutrition. And today we have the newest staff member of the Institute with us, Chef Patrick Garmong. Hello, Patrick.
Hi, LaWanda. How are you today?
I'm great. How are you?
Good, thanks.
So do you want me to call you Patrick or Chef Patrick?
You know, Patrick's fine.
Very good. Okay, we'll go with Patrick. That's like, so I have to tell a quick story. So when I first got my doctorate, my girls were, oh gracious, they were a lot younger.
Yeah.
And so my oldest, I'll say she was probably in about fourth grade, maybe. At the time I had been teaching and we were around some of my students who were then my husband's students because he was the high school band director.
Oh, that's right.
So one of my students, former students, came by and they're like, oh, hey, Miss Morse. And sweet little Emily, who at the time was, I'm just going to say, was probably 10-ish. She turned around and she goes, stuck her little finger up. She goes, excuse me, that is Dr. Morse. So, yes, so I'm all about making sure that I use the appropriate title because I know there's a lot of work that goes behind it. So,
no, make absolutely, sure I appreciate that.
So, we are so thrilled to have you here at the Institute.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here. This is such an incredible place with so many opportunities for people to learn, thrive, and grow in their career. And I'm just honored that I was selected to be a member of this team.
It was, I feel like I have a different connection with you maybe than others because I had the opportunity to be on your search committee. When we found out that we were going to have the opportunity to hire a chef, it was very exciting from our standpoint because it was something that we were really missing. So what did you think when you saw the posting go out, or how did you find out about it?
So I was sitting at work. I was a child nutrition director in the state of Washington, and I got an e-blast there was this position open, and it didn't take me long to go, well, you know what? I'm going to kick myself if I don't go for something like this. So I put in my packet and went home and told my wife, hey, I'm thinking about applying for this position. Oops. She said, where's that at? I said, it's in Mississippi. She said, no way. I said, no, just take a look. And she said, okay. I think you should put your information in. I said, okay, good. She goes, you already did, didn't you? I said, yeah, I did.
What is it? Ask for forgiveness first, permission later?
Yeah. No, honestly, I didn't think I'd even get a phone call, let alone a first interview. So I was just really honored to be able to go through the process and really excited when I was offered the position.
So your official title, I'll let you give the title so I don't mess it up.
No, that's fine. It's a little wordy. It's the Associate Director of Culinary Education and Training.
Okay, very good. So you're almost the counterpart to what Macy Flott and I do. I'm the Associate Director of Education and Training. She's the Associate Director of, well, and I should add grants for my part, and she's right. Associate Director of Education and Training Cooperative Agreement. So we're really counterparts in that.
No, absolutely. Yeah, and I know that as we progress down this road with the Institute that we'll be leaning on each other for different aspects, and same with Macy and I. So I'm really excited to be working with both of you.
Well, we are, like I said, very thrilled to have you here.
Thank you.
So the Culinary Academy or Culinary Institute is a brand new initiative that we're setting out on. Tell us a little bit about what that is.
Well, there's a lot of pieces to it, which is it's really exciting. It's going to be kind of a three-phase rollout over the first 3 years initially. In this first year, it's really creating infrastructure and getting an advisory council together of key stakeholders that can help us take this program from conception into inception.
Because I will say, sorry to interrupt you, but I will say I know when we were looking to hire a chef, Like, there was not a job title for what we're asking you to do in existence. So this really is, you say infrastructure, but we really are building this from the ground up.
Yeah, no, I mean, this is a very unique position. There really is nothing like it out there in the field right now. So it's really excited to be on the ground floor of this and be able to build something from scratch. There's a lot of resources out there on programs that have been done at a state level or maybe at a university or culinary school level with building their own programs. But with this being a national rollout for child nutrition specific, it's just a different animal than what we've ever seen before. Mm-hmm. So relying on some of those past experiences of different entities that have done similar things, drawing upon those and building from there is going to be really critical in making sure that we put this together the right way.
So who is this targeting? What group are we looking most to bring in?
So the initial three cohorts we're looking to work with are school cooks who may or may not have the culinary resources and skill sets that they need to be able to move child nutrition into a more scratch-based cooking setting. School managers and directors who, again, may or may not have those skill sets, so we may need to enhance or establish those skill sets with them so they can train their staff, their frontline staff, on how to scratch cook and basics like how to use a knife, how to use certain equipment in the kitchen that maybe they haven't had to utilize before. Mm-hmm. And then the third group that we're looking to work with is chefs. Chefs have the skill set and know how to cook, but child nutrition is so much different than what they're used to in their other settings, whether it's restaurant, higher education, catering, business. Child nutrition has so many different nuances between regulations and the dollars and cents of it all that we need to get them up to speed on how they can be effective with us and help propel, help elevate the culinary experience for students across the country.
So because chefs in the school setting, I think, tends to be one of the areas that is often overlooked. What led you as a chef to go into child nutrition?
Well, to be honest, it was family. My wife and I decided that it was time to start settling down and have children. Mm-hmm. And working in restaurants 16 hours a day, every holiday, every weekend, celebrating somebody else's big event rather than our own, became something that we realized is it was missing from our life, and we needed to be able to celebrate together as a family. So a position came up with the school district I was at, and I just kind of threw my hat in the ring, and again, just thinking, oh, maybe, maybe not. And sure enough, I got that position and really gravitated towards wanting to make a difference in children's lives at that point.
Right. I think having been a classroom teacher, I taught for almost 9 years before I moved into leadership. You don't always look at the cafeteria as being a culinary experience. Now, I'm one of those weird people. I love, quote, cafeteria food. But I have, at moving to the Institute, have really seen some excellent chefs doing amazing things in school districts where it's not necessarily cafeteria food. And is that kind of the mindset behind pushing, and I hate to, school nutrition professionals to a higher level of culinary ability?
Well, I think it's twofold, right? It's getting our frontline employees skill set so that they're marketable and able to enhance their own knowledge and skill set and feel like they are able to provide more of themselves into what they're doing every day rather than just opening boxes and heating food.
Right.
The other piece of it, though, really is connecting children with food. And the earlier we're able to connect kids with healthier foods, the more they're going to be able to establish those lifelong relationships with healthy foods.
Got it.
Which, you know, if we do a timeline of we get kids eating healthy now and establishing better relationships with different foods maybe they're not seeing at home, you know, they're going to be able to enhance that experience for their children and their children, and hopefully we can get a perpetual growth in the health of our children as time marches on.
That's amazing. Again, going back to when I was in the schools, and I have two children who are in a K-12 school, you don't always think about the education opportunities that exist in the cafeteria setting. So I think that's a great way to look at it.
Yeah, thank you.
So you mentioned that this is going to be a multi-year rollout. This is the year one. You've been with us for a week now?
About a week and a half.
Okay, week and a half. So we are early in year one.
Very much.
So tell us a little bit about the next couple of years.
So after we get the infrastructure laid out and start establishing a baseline of what trainings have been created and drawing upon those, then we're going to be able to identify some of the gaps and build some training curriculum around those gaps. One of the areas we looked at immediately was we can show people how to cook, but we're not showing them how to do mass production cooking.
Okay.
So there's an area of opportunity there. So once we've established some of those baselines, we're going to start piloting a program where we're bringing in the three cohorts we talked about, mm-hmm. the school cooks, managers, and directors, and then chefs for a week-long time period here at the Institute, 10 from each of those cohorts. And they'll spend time here with our staff learning skill sets, whether it be culinary skills or child nutrition information for the chefs. And then at the end of that time together, it'll be a capstone project where they are working together to create and build a recipe that hopefully we can be able to send out and add to our portfolio as well. So during that time, we'll be piloting that to see where we're lacking, where we need to be building better, or maybe we did a great job initially. So
I think that sounds so exciting. I had the opportunity to work a little bit with Healthy Cuisine for Kids. I don't know how much time you've spent with that curriculum, but did some review and revised work on that about a year or two ago, and had the opportunity to work with some of the chefs and some of our dietitians that came in with that project. And it was so exciting to see that collaboration between those two groups. So I can only imagine how exciting it's going to be for them to then work together on a week-long project and to even bring in that third cohort of your cooks. I think that'll be great.
Yeah, no, it's going to it's going to open each group's eyes to mm-hmm. what's available and how each different person really has an impact on the overall success of school nutrition. So I'm really excited about being able to build this and get it up and running.
Awesome. So how did your wife receive the, okay, it's official, we're moving to Mississippi?
So the director of the Institute, Dr. Alicia Hall Campbell, called on our anniversary.
Oh, happy anniversary. Yeah, that was pretty awesome.
It was pretty awesome. I had found out earlier in the day, a couple people had reached out to me that they was doing some reference checks. So I went home and said, oh, I might be getting a phone call today. And she goes, good, I'm excited. This is going to be great. So the further down the road we got, the more excited she got about this opportunity for us and our family. And both of our children are very young. So if we're going to move, this was the time to do it.
Yeah. Well, as a mom, I can tell you it's a great place for your children to grow up. When we moved back to Oxford, my girls were third and fifth graders. And they're now 8th and 10th graders.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, so
one just started driving, right?
Yes, oh, just boy. Have a driver. So it's a great community. You know, Oxford is one of those unique places where we're a university town, which, you know, the Institute's housed on the Ole Miss campus. But you have that big town feel, but it's still a very small community. And I think that's so unique. And people, when they get to come to the Institute, they really feel that. And, you know, as a Mississippi girl, we pride ourselves on our Southern hospitality. And I think it's a great place that we'll be able to bring people to the Institute. And the more opportunities we have to do that, I think something like this is going to be awesome.
Yeah, no, absolutely. We are blown away by the welcoming we've received, not just from the folks here at the Institute, but in the Oxford community in general. Right. Just some of the most polite, caring, gracious people we've ever met. And Oxford is, it's filled. We came from a small town, and Oxford's filled with amenities that we didn't think we were going to find here. So mm-hmm. we've been pleasantly delighted.
That's great. That's really good. So we're coming up on Thanksgiving. Now, we're going to actually probably air this podcast will probably be aired in December. So Thanksgiving will have passed, but it will be during the holiday season.
Absolutely.
So in keeping with the holiday season, as a school chef, what was your favorite meal to prepare for the kids or to plan for them?
So we took, in Washington State, in early October, they do something called Taste Washington Day.
Okay.
Well, I changed that when I was at the district, and we moved it to a fall harvest celebration around Thanksgiving time, where we, so the parents came in, it used to be called Turkey Day, and it would be the, you know, the turkey gravy over the instant potatoes with the green beans, yep, and the green salad, and very traditional, you know, school meal.
Peaches or cinnamon apples probably for dessert, I'm guessing.
Yep. All those standards. And, you know, at that time we'd been really kind of propelling our standards for what we were doing and increasing our scratch cooking. And I figured, you know, this was a great opportunity for us to highlight to parents, because they were the ones coming in, mm-hmm, what we're actually feeding their students. Mm-hmm. So for that meal, we did fresh roasted Washington grown chicken,
nice,
roasted potatoes. Our salads were spring mixes with local carrots, and really highlighting the bounty of what was available in our region at that time. And then I made crisp. I made all of the crisp. It was about 2,000 servings of a fresh apple and pear crisp that did for all the schools. So it was great to be able to highlight what we were doing and the real foods we were serving to their children. Mm-hmm. At that point, we were serving Washington-grown chicken legs every single Wednesday. I was calling it Washington Wednesday. So really highlighting that it wasn't gelatinized turkey gravy over, right, instant whip. It was real food, and mm-hmm, this is what their kids were actually eating.
You know, I think having been a parent, kids come home and tell you some things, and as a teacher, my husband and I've always said to a parent, if you'll believe half of what your child comes home and tells you about us, we'll believe half of what your children come to school and tell us. So, you know, playing the parent role, they'll come home and say, Mom, there wasn't anything good in the cafeteria today.
Right.
So I think it is such a great thing that you opened it up to parents and allowed them to come in. And I know our local schools here and across the nation have opportunities for parents to come in. But tell us a little bit about the scratch cooking movement and moving away from the boxed foods. And tell us about that.
Yeah, so for us, what we did is it was kind of strategic and incremental, slowly adding in recipes, whether they're quick scratch or just building something that we weren't building before, like parfaits or sandwiches, mm-hmm, or items like that, that maybe they were kind of doing before, but they weren't executing at the same level. And seeing the staff, seeing the response from the students and seeing the fresh products really propelled them to want to do more.
Mm-hmm.
So it was good. It, you know, there's always going to be some stumbling blocks along the way. Students are maybe being introduced to foods that they don't customarily see or isn't something they readily get at home. But in, you know, I think we all know that it takes 10 to 15 times for a child to see something before, right, they actually are going to end up liking it. So it's about staying the course, you know, pushing the envelope a little bit, but understanding where maybe you've gone a little too far and scale back, mm-hmm, and, regroup and try again.
You know, I feel like we're a fast food society for the most part, and we don't see those culinary skills that our grandparents and great-grandparents had. Is that kind of the thought process behind the Culinary Institute to build those skills that may not be as common nowadays?
No, absolutely. I mean, so some of the staff I started with, they were there on staff when scratch cooking kind of ended.
Okay.
You know, there's kind of this weird transition in the 80s and 90s where we went from, you know, school cafeterias making food to it was a lot of prefab.
And what do you think was the push for that, Patrick?
You know, I think there was probably funding issues at the time, okay, that probably had a lot to do with that, and just societal changes.
Mm-hmm.
So we had a group of staff that some of them had some baseline skill set knowledge, mm-hmm, but they transitioned into the more prefab stuff. So it was good to see them get re-engaged in wanting to go back to doing things, quote unquote, the old way.
Right.
There was some resistance though, because it's pretty easy to open boxes and put stuff in ovens.
Yep.
You know, so it takes a little bit more energy and thought and time, because now you have to prep stuff out.
Mm-hmm.
You have to slack out proteins a few days in advance to make sure they're thawed, not just put nuggets on a tray and slap it in the oven.
Right. So you say that, I have to tell you a funny story. A friend of mine posted on Facebook last night.
So his daughter is in college. It's her first year at college. And she and her roommate had gone to the grocery store and wanted turkey for lunch. So they they bought a frozen 25-pound turkey. And they were going to come back and fix it for lunch that day. And so she texted her mom and she said, "Mom, we can't use the oven right now. Somebody's using it. How long do we need to put it in the microwave for so we can have this for lunch?" And the mother just responded with, you know, one of the emojis, the covered eyes, and said, "You're killing me right now."
Oh my gosh.
Right?
It's reality that we've, as a society, probably lost touch with some basic cooking skills.
Sure.
And why, where, when, and how that's happened. There's tons of different theories, but there's a lot we can do to change our future rather than dwelling on the whys of our past.
Absolutely. Which I think is so exciting when you talk about putting our children in touch with the food so that they get that fresh, scratch-cooked meal at school. Because for a lot of kids, they get two of their three, and sometimes even three of their three basic meals at school every day.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's one of the things that I was very cognizant about in transforming our program was that, you know, nutrition isn't nutrition until it's actually consumed and it's in the child's belly.
Right.
So if we're making scratch foods and we're promoting that we're making scratch foods, but the kids aren't eating those foods, mm-hmm. we're not doing anyone any service other than trying to place some sort of awkward badge of honor on our lapel. So we needed to make sure that as we progressed, we were doing things that serviced our students. And that may be a different ideal as an adult than a student. Yeah. We may think, oh, quinoa and all these great things. A child may not look at that the same way. So it has to be very strategic in how we do it and make sure that they're flavors that they're accustomed to and that, you know, we're pushing them a little bit, but not so far out of their comfort zone where they're just going to be completely resistant.
Right. You know, I think I look at, again, I reference my children, but they will fall back on the Kraft mac and cheese in a heartbeat given the opportunity versus me putting something on the table that they've never tried before. So,
right.
You know, that desire to stick with what you know.
Absolutely.
And I mean, think we're adults, we do it too.
And, you know, yeah, absolutely. I mean, who doesn't love a good box of easy mac and cheese, right? But, I mean, even last night's an example. My wife and I, we had a leftover pork tenderloin, made a quick cauliflower riced fried rice.
Mm-hmm.
And we're like, well, let's try, see if the boys will eat it. And one's 11 months and one's 2.5. And the 11-month-old was a little more adventurous and tried a few bites.
Okay.
The 2.5-year-old just covered his eyes and waited until we made something else. But, you know, it's about exposure.
Yeah.
It's about trying. And even though I'm in this position, it's not lost on me that, you know, it takes effort to get your kids to try stuff different. And not everyone has the resources available to them to put a few different meals in front of their child.
Right.
So sometimes it's, you have to do what you have to do just to get your kids fed.
Sure. Well, and then you take that and we extend that into the classroom or into the cafeteria. And if you have parents who are either in a, I've heard them referred to as food desert or food desolate area, they may not have the opportunity to expose their kids to quinoa or to jicama or whatever even something as simple as a fresh salad, you know, that may not be available. So when their children go to school and that's put out on the serving line, their initial response may be like your kids, you know, cover their eyes and, oh, geez, hope there's something better down the line.
Yeah, no, absolutely. There's a lot to be said for exposure, and there's a lot that we as a society could be doing to help not just our kids that are around us, but kids across the country in identifying new and better and healthier ways to eat. And part of it also includes educating the adults, educating the parents that, you know, the 80s ketchup was a vegetable. Well, it's not a vegetable anymore. So we need to move past that.
So when do we anticipate, I know we say year two, but do we really anticipate bringing these cohorts in after about a year or kind of what's the plan there?
So their training is going to actually be in three phases. We're going to ask them to do some prerequisites before they get here.
Okay.
To make sure that they have, you know, some baseline knowledge. So when they are here, we're not spending time with the basic building blocks that
sure.
we're actually going to be able to get in there and do some hands-on stuff and get them trained and have their time here with us spent in the best way possible.
You said it was going to be a week-long process, right?
That's what we're looking at right now. And then once they leave, there'll also be some post-requisite classes that we're asking them to take. And some of those may deal with more soft skills, communication, working as a team, customer service, effective leadership, I think was one as well. So once we've kind of piloted it through year two and seen what's worked, then year three is when we're going to try to do our full implementation.
Okay.
And invite, have quarterly a group of three cohorts come in and work with us.
That'd be awesome. So do we envision the cohorts being from a school? So like would the cook and the manager and the director be from the same school system, or do we really envision it being, and or is that still kind of open to being decided?
You know, I think that may still be kind of in the pre-planning phases to see what works best. And we're going to rely really heavily, I think, on our advisory council to help us, because we're going to be drawing from some people that have some really good experience with this. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, you know, in my own experience, you know, a cook may not be as responsive and open if their manager director standing right there.
Sure.
So it might be better to have, you know, people from all over the nation working together rather than, you know, or a manager director might not feel as open to be themselves around their cook.
Right. Absolutely.
So it's all worth exploring, though.
Agreed. Well, it's just such an exciting opportunity for me to watch from the outside and to watch it grow. And I can only imagine how exciting it is to be on the ground level of that.
No, it's really exciting. Right now, it's a little bit of drinking from a fire hose, looking at all the, there's so many great resources out there nationwide, not just the stuff that the ICN has built, which are phenomenal resources. And I really hope people spend more time utilizing our resources and sharing that we have these great resources with their employees and fellow directors in other districts and getting the word out about us. But there's a lot of states that have put together some really, really great programs that are just in their state that we can draw from and build on to be able to deliver these services at a national level. And one of the cool things is as we create this this platform for the Culinary Institute, we're going to be able to create sections of learning that we'll be able to utilize in other ways too, that won't just be for the Institute, but if someone calls up and says, hey, we really need a knife skills course, something that we may be able to send out on the road and provide at their place rather than
that's exciting
them having to come here.
That's very exciting. Well, Patrick, I appreciate you stopping by, because like I said, I know you're just inundated with information right now, so I appreciate you taking time out of your schedule to stop by and chat with us. Is there anything I didn't ask that you want to share, or anything you want to wrap up with, or that I didn't ask you that I should have?
You know, nothing I can think of at the moment. I'm just really thankful that you asked me to sit in on this podcast, and I think it's great that we're able to communicate with our users in this way rather than just in the formal presentation manner.
Absolutely. Well, I'll be sure and have you stop back by once, maybe in the middle of year one, and may kind of see where our progress is.
That'll be great. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Thank you, Patrick. I appreciate it. And until next time, tune in next month for more iBites. And until then, remember, there's nothing more important than the health and well-being of our nation's children. This project has been funded at least in part with federal funds from the U.S. Department of Agriculture Food and Nutrition Service through an agreement with the Institute of Child Nutrition at the University of Mississippi. The contents of this publication do not necessarily reflect the views or policies of the U.S. Department of Agriculture, nor does mention of trade names, commercial products, or organizations imply endorsement by the U.S. government. The University of Mississippi is an EEOAA Title VI, Title IX, Section 504, ADA, ADEA employer. In accordance with federal law and U.S. Department of Agriculture policy, this institution is prohibited from discriminating on the basis of race, color, national origin, sex, age, or disability. To file a complaint of discrimination, write USDA Director, Office of Civil Rights, Room 326W, Whitten Building, 1400 Independence Avenue, Southwest, Washington, D.C., 202-50-9410, or call 202-720-5964.
USDA is an equal opportunity provider and employer.